Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 105 in studio episodes of The Last Round. Thanks again for joining us wherever you are around the world. We appreciate it. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all that stuff. I don't know. Like I told you, Mike, one day I'm going to say every single platform we're on. Boxing Social, Podcast, Spotify. I mean, what do we have? Maybe like 30 different ones that we're on? Something like that?
The new one, Amazon?
Amazon. Music. Good thinking. Good point. If you're an Amazon, you know, enthusiast or something, we are now on their Amazon Music app or something like that. Amazon Podcasts, Audible, or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think the app's called Audible, but it's, you know, Amazon Music, essentially.
Yeah. It's an Amazon platform. So we are now on there as well. So usually we try to stay on top of that. But, you know, kind of jumping right into it off of a pretty passionate weekend, especially over here in Las Vegas. You know, I know Mike yesterday was pretty passionate about this past Saturday's event, you know, just about all the outcomes and all the official decisions. Like, it was a pretty wild night, you know. People are so mad, but like, hey, at least we're getting attention. When somebody like Joe Rogan, you know, we were just talking about this right before we came on air. When somebody like who's, you know, got a pretty big platform and they're tweeting about boxing, especially a boxing card that's not really like that significant in terms of to casuals, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So, hey, that's awesome. You know, regardless, you know, it might be criticism, but oh well. But like I said, jumping right into it, fight reviews this past Saturday, the 14th of November from the bubble at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas on regular ESPN over here in the United States. The main event, Terrence Crawford improves to 37-0 with the fourth round stoppage over your fellow countryman, Mike. Kell Brook, the special one, and Crawford retains his WBO welterweight world title. First question, Mike, is Kell Brook still the special one?
No. Definitely not. I didn't like his body language. You know, obviously, stepping in there, I think most people thought, you know, Terrence Crawford was going to win. The only way Kell Brook, you know, could really have won, you know, if he managed to turn back Father Time, you know, come back like he did a few years ago. He got in there on weight, looked good, probably won the first two rounds, maybe the first three rounds. And then as soon as, you know, Terrence Crawford kind of slipped it up into another gear, you know, he caught him early on in that round. Had him stumbled against the ropes. I just didn't like his body language. You know, he kind of, you know, turned away, didn't want to obviously get hit again. The referee could have probably have stopped it the first time. He kind of looked a little bit out there. Terrence Crawford just came back. And I think everybody says, you know, once Crawford has you hurt, he probably is one of the best finishers out there.
Well, when Crawford turned southpaw is when Brook really started having those problems. Because when Crawford was orthodox, Brook was landing. I mean, I think it was Crawford's right eye started to get, like, I think it started to, like, kind of have some swelling. Like, it was visible. You know, it was only, you know, the fight was only four rounds. So if he was doing that damage to that eye within, like, the first three, four rounds, I mean, that shows you something. He was connecting. He was precise. But when Crawford turned southpaw, that's when you can see Brook couldn't really figure it out. You know, and then he gets caught with that, you know, that it was almost like a Triple G-esque jab. What would you call it? Like a straight hard. I mean, that was pretty much what kind of tumbled him. Right. I mean, or was it? Am I wrong? Just,
like as Kell Brook kind of came forward, he just kind of caught him with a stiff, you know, right hand, obviously from the southpaw stance.
Right.
And that just kind of shook Brook up. And I think, you know, Brook afterwards was chatting to Terrence Crawford behind the scenes, and you know, he told him, he's like, you know, it's just your timing. He's like, I just didn't see that coming. I don't know whether he was trying to play down the amount of power he had, but he was kind of emphasizing, you know, how good Crawford's timing was.
Right.
So it's Crawford, you know, Brook was kind of very honest. He said, he's like, I've never been dropped like that before in sparring and in professional fights. So it just shows, you know, how good Terence Crawford is. And I think everybody now just wants him to go on there and face the, you know, the bigger and better names. You know, the two best people probably on his resume at 147 have to be the two Brits, I would say, you know, Kell Brook and Amir Khan, both probably over the hill. But, you know, in terms of resume, they're still on there.
In terms of names or in terms of competition?
Just in terms of names, I think they're both kind of over the hill. You know, Amir Khan seemed to take the easy way out because he knew it was kind of slowly going downhill for him and he was probably going to get knocked out. Kell Brook, you know, Crawford took him, you know, took him to school, really. Just as soon as he decided to up it, he got him out of there, even though Kell Brook, I can't remember the exact statistic, but he was, you know, substantially connecting with Crawford more than anybody else. I think it was something like 36% of the punches he was throwing was connecting with Crawford, which was...
Yeah, he was landing on him. I mean, like...
I think it was like, sort of like 16% higher than the average in most of Crawford's other fights. So, you know, he kind of had, you know, solved that puzzle in the first couple of rounds. But like everybody says, I think Crawford is kind of like Lomachenko when he kind of slowly works you out. And then as he did, you know, as soon as the fourth round came, he just slipped it up into fourth or fifth gear and, you know, took him out of there.
No, you're right. You're right. And like you mentioned, Kell Brook was landing at a higher than average percentage against Crawford than, you know, prior opponents of Crawford. Because I remember when they showed the first set of CompuBox stats, I think Brook had landed, I think 15, 20 more punches, 15 more punches or something like that, like overall for that round. And I was like, oh, wow. Or it might have been the first two rounds. I don't know when they showed it. But I mean, like, if Brook had never had these issues with both of his eye sockets against Triple G, Errol Spence, he never had to have like surgery. I think they said it. He has like metal in there or something like that. Am I wrong?
Right. I believe so. Yeah, he has metal on the sides.
Right.
Where the bone is.
Right. So, like, I mean, I think you have to recognize that Brook still has skill. He does. Just based on those four rounds, if you exclude the stoppage, obviously, and how he got hurt and how it was stopped, he still has skill. You know, is it still skill for him to remain a professional and keep boxing? Probably not, because in terms of, you know, the medical risk and all that stuff, he probably should consider hanging him up, you know, from a medical standpoint. But think about, like, how would this fight have gone if they fought, let's just say, before the Triple G fight, maybe 3-4 years ago? You know, how much different could it have been? What do you think if this fight was 4 years ago? How do you think it would go? Honestly,
it's kind of hard to say because of, you know, the Kell Brook, ever since beating Sean Porter, never really stepped up to that level and consistently fought, you know, what we would class as A-class fighters. He kind of dropped down, didn't live the life outside of the ring. And, you know, I think Eddie Hearn and people around him knew that. So that's why he was given, you know, like your JoJo Dans, you know, and other names like that, kind of like your B-level, C-level fighters. So it's kind of hard to say. You know, I really rated Brook at that time. And I think other people have said they thought he was one of, if not the best welterweights, you know, a few years back.
Right.
It's just not living that life outside of the ring where, you know, your Terence Crawfords and other people do. And that's what separates the very best to those people that, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, you know, reiterating my opinion from a medical standpoint, you know, and like you said, even when he got hit with that straight hard jab from Crawford, like you can tell he almost fell through the ropes. You know, if there was fans there, he would have landed on their laps, you know, like, and then, you know, right after that, like, Crawford just jumps on him. Like you said, he's one of the best finishers in the game, if not the best finisher. I mean, you could just see it in Brook's eyes, like in his body language. Like you said, he just, he's not the same. Like, you know, he can't take that punishment. And when you're trying to fight at that level with those type of guys, those marquee names, that marquee talent, that's all you're going to face. You know, that's the type of punishment you're going to have to take. Like, and obviously Brook has showed that he still has some skill, but he just can't take those highly competitive shots from these marquee talents. He just can't, you know? So like the only way I think if he continues his boxing career is if he fights lower level guys just to kind of keep busy. And, but I mean, from protecting like his injuries as he's had in the past, especially his face, his eye sockets, he needs to stay away from, you know, the Crawfords again, the Porters, the Danny Garcias, all those high marquee names, like, you know, like, but before we kind of dive into like Crawford and what, you know, what his situation is now going forward and, you know, contract wise and everything, is a fight of the century going to happen now since Brook lost? Are we going to get, Mike, and you tell me, Amir Khan versus Kell Brook? Tell me.
I think if Kell Brook wants to carry on fighting and get, you know, like at the last one or two paydays, I think the Amir Khan fight is the only fight that really makes sense. You know, I'm sure that if they stick it on pay-per-view, it'll probably still attract, you know, viewers, because that's just unfortunately what the boxing fans are like. You know, as much as we trash, you know, certain pay-per-views, we always end up paying it because there's nothing else to do on a weekend. We end up paying it and we'll probably watch it. And, you know, touching on, like we said, it kind of, the body language looked like, you know, Kell didn't really like being hit anymore, whether that's just something, you know, mentally, because of the fact of the big injuries he had against, you know, Triple G and Errol Spence. Luckily, fighting Khan, Khan's not the biggest puncher. Right. You know, it's more of kind of referee stoppages from, you know, consistent blows than Khan really having that one punch knockout power. Right. You know, there's genuine spite between them, so the build-up would be good. And I'm sure it would be a good payday for Amir and for Kell if they actually want to settle it. If not, it depends on, does Kell want to drop down to stuff like British level? You know, people have always talked about Kell Brook fighting Liam Smith because of the sparring sessions he had. I think it was when Kell was training for the Triple G fight. I believe him and Liam Smith had some, you know, pay-per-view worthy sparring is what everybody says. Damn. So it really depends. You know, everyone says that Kell financially is set after getting a huge payday against Triple G. I believe the payday Mike Coppinger put out was $2 million for last night. And it's more really just he sticks around because, you know, he loves boxing. You know, he was hoping he could, you know, do something legendary, you know, trying to set some legacy by beating Terence Crawford. So does he want to drop down and fight Amir Khan for no belt? Well, actually, the WBC probably would put a belt on the line for that. Or does he want to drop down to British level and fight Liam Smith? You know, really the ball's in Kell's court now is, you know, what does he want to do? Where does he want to go from here?
No, you're right. I mean, I don't know. He really needs to consider his next move because, you know, it's not the risk of these injuries. I mean, it'd be one thing if he like, if it was his hand or like a shoulder thing or something, like it's still bad. But like his sensitive area is his freaking face. It's his face. Like nobody wants to have injuries there. Like it's like one of the worst places you could have it. And he gets punched in the face professionally. Like I just don't see any decent outcome in the future where that, if he keeps fighting, and especially keeps fighting guys who are, you know, obviously marquee talents or, you know, decent enough to cause pretty good damage, I don't see how he doesn't have like long-term effects from these injuries. Like it's going to be bad, you know? I mean, I don't know, but maybe he's going to hang it up. I think he said in one of the interviews after this past Saturday's fights that I think he was like acknowledging, he's like, oh, you know, I kind of have to look at, like, it was kind of a way where he was like kind of saying, maybe I should look into hanging him up, you know, but who knows? I mean, they might, like you said, you might throw Amir Khan in there and be like, let's just give it to the people. Let's do it. But who knows? But I also think that kind of irritated me when they were interviewing Brooke at the end, the ESPN guys, like, you got to give it to Brooke. He was total class. Like he was like, yeah, this guy, you know, he gave Crawford the props. He was like, yeah, it's, you know, I just got I stopped. Like, he total class. Didn't make. I don't think I didn't hear any excuses. He might have, but I don't think he did. The ESPN team was literally trying to get Brooke to say that Crawford was better than Spence, because obviously Brooke fought both of them. And, you know, if you want to look at it, you know, from this angle, like, well, you know, Crawford stopped, you know, Brooke way, you know, way before Spence did. It took Spence like 10 rounds or whatever it was, 10, 11 rounds. It's just like, come on, man, you can't make that comparison. You can't make that comparison. Like, those were different Kell Brooks. But they were trying to get Kell Brook. They kept asking him, like, oh, about Errol Spence, you know, I mean, it took Spence 11 rounds to stop you, and, you know, Crawford stopped you in four. It's just like, and he didn't say anything about it. He was just like, he just kind of danced around it. But they were really trying to get him to talk about Spence. You know, I mean, you gotta give it to Bob Arum and Top Rank. They're really trying to turn up the heat now in the media from a PR standpoint on PBC and Errol Spence and all these other guys, because that's their only way to get these fights for Crawford. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, it was kind of funny and kind of irritating at the time. Like, he kept trying to reword it, trying to get Kell Brook to say something negative, you know, about Errol Spence, or, you know, say that Crawford was the heavier puncher. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of funny as well that, you know, Bob Arum and Terence Crawford were getting interviewed, and Bob Arum's talking about, like, how Spence doesn't want it, blah, blah, blah. And then they turned to Crawford, and Crawford was like, yeah, I want Manny Pacquiao next.
You know, yeah, where did that come from?
After they were trying to push the Errol Spence narrative so much, he turns around and says he wants Pacquiao. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, as, you know, a boxing fan, we'd all want to see Spence. I would take Pacquiao. I would take Danny Garcia. Any of those, I think, from the PBC side is, you know, what we want to see Crawford fight. We don't want to see him in with, you know, another, you know, Chris Van Heerden or someone else that the Top Rank decide to dig up because they can't get anybody else. You know, if he gets to the, you know, like me and you were texting the other day, you know, if he gets to next summer, I think it's October 2021, and that's when Crawford's contract runs out, he may have to leave. He may have to go over to PBC just to get those fights.
Right. I mean, I think even if his contract runs out and they offer him an extension, which obviously they're going to try if it comes to that point, he shouldn't be signing any long-term contracts with, you know, especially with Top Rank. Because, I mean, if he's like, okay, I'm going to sign with you guys for two fights, or it's a one-fight deal or something like that. I mean, he's already made a ton of money. Like, it's not like he needs the money. But if he signs another long-term deal with them, like, that, I mean, what is that going to tell you? Like, I think Steve Kim tweeted, and he made a pretty good point. He was just like, you know, I think it's a mutual parting of ways would probably be the best course of action for both parties, because, you know, Crawford needs to fight these guys for his legacy. Like, you know, people know that he's good, but he's about to be 35. He's going to be 35 next year. He's going to be 35 years old.
The problem I think you have is when you see him in interviews, he genuinely seems to not care about, you know, the names on his resume. He seems to think, you know, I did enough at 140. I've got a belt at 147, you know, pretty much, you know, like Bomac and everybody else that's in that kind of, you know, Bomac and Terence Crawford stable, Steve Nelson, Jamel Herring, all the up and coming guys that Crawford has, they're all with Top Rank.
Right.
So I do wonder whether that's kind of come into play. And Crawford's going to, you know, being, you know, a guy that's come up from the streets and stuff like that, you know, I think, you know, like, respect and loyalty is something, you know, kind of big to him. And is he going to side with Top Rank in the fact that Top Rank kind of made him who he is?
I don't see him. I could be wrong. I mean, if they were talking about, he said he wanted Pacquiao, and then I think Bob Arum or even Crawford had said that there was a deal in place before COVID, supposedly. I mean, there was never anything official reported for that. You know, that's just them saying that. You know, like, we know how Top Rank is, how Bob Arum is. He kind of just says things.
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh, yeah, well, I'm trying, or I made an offer, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, you know, He's the definition of a promoter. He really is. But he mentions like that they're going to try to make the Manny Pacquiao fight, that Pacquiao's guarantee was already there. That wasn't an issue.
It was 23 million, I think.
$23 million. Like, it's wild. That wasn't an issue. Like, that they had to go to like Saudi Arabia, because that's where he had to, like, that's where the money's at, you know. Supposedly that was like, and it's funny that Bob Arum was saying, like, he was just like, yeah, he's like, everything was already in place, and then the health minister of Saudi Arabia or that area said, hey, you know, we should hold off because I don't know if we're going to be able to have it with fans because everything is going on. And so, like, they kind of put a stop to it. But it's just like, you know, was any of that reported? Like, I never saw any reputable reporting about, like, hey, Pacquiao and Crawford are in advanced talks or this and that. Like, you know, like, it was all Bob Arum.
And the UFC's been in Saudi Arabia the whole of the summer.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly. That's what I thought too. I was just like, what? I was like, why wouldn't? I was just like, you would think something would leak, but maybe not. But I don't know. I don't see a Pacquiao fight. I think, like I said, like, they're just putting media pressure, PR pressure on the PBC fighters, Pacquiao, Spence, all those guys, the Heyman stable, if you will. They're trying to put media pressure on them by saying, like, oh, they don't want to fight Terrence. I mean, like, Bob Arum, he says it in interviews. He said it last night when he was standing there next to Terrence Crawford. He was like, Spence doesn't want to fight Terrence because he knows that Terrence will beat him. You know, pretty much calling him like, oh, you're a chicken. Like, because you don't want to fight my guy, because, you know, like, pretty much trying to shame them into fighting him. But which might work. It might work. I mean, you know, that when's the last time Top Rank or Bob Arum have been this adamant the last couple months about pressure for those fighters? Because they know, like, okay, they've hit a wall with Terrence Crawford. Like, there's nobody else for him to fight where they can get away with it. Who else could they fight? I mean, realistically, let's just say you are Bob Arum, Mike. Let's play a hypothetical here. You are Bob Arum. And you're going to have to give us your Bob Arum voice too. And you're trying to make these PBC fights for Crawford and doesn't work. Realistically, who could you put Crawford in if you still have to keep him busy if he doesn't get any of these other marquee names?
The problem is they're all tied up with, you know, the PBC. You're looking at people like Jesse Vargas, Jose Cito Lopez. That's two people that aren't with the PBC. I don't know, because that whole division is really kind of tied up with those guys. And obviously the British people have been, obviously he's already taken out Amir Khan, obviously fought Kell Brook, Mo Hooker. Maybe like Regis Prograis is out now with the PBC as well. They're kind of really stuck. And I think, like we touched on, I think the fact that they come into the last 11 months or so of Crawford's contract, right, I think is the reason Bob Arum is now putting the pressure on the PBC to make those fights. But because now it's kind of well known that Crawford's contract's coming to an end, is the PBC going to say, well, no, we'll wait. And yeah, we'll sign him.
That's exactly what they're going to do. They know, like, you know, everything's already out in the open that his contract is supposedly up, and now that there's pressure or something. I don't know. Who knows if this is even all, whatever the hell's going on? You know, only certain intimate parties know. But you're right. If Heyman is a smart enough guy, which obviously he is, that's exactly what he's going to do. He's like, why am I going to give him a chance? This is how he's going to look at it. Why am I going to put one of my guys, Spence, you know, Porter, especially Spence with two titles, why am I going to put him in there against Crawford, share a piece of the financial pie with Top Rank, and risk my guy losing and them taking the belts? And then he resigns a long-term deal with Top Rank, and then they have the titles, and then they're in power. Why wouldn't I just wait for Crawford's contract to expire, and then I sign him?
How do you think it looks on Crawford if he does sign? If he sits there and says, you know what, loyalty and stuff like that means a lot to me, Top Rank made me, I get along with ESPN. Bomac has a good position with ESPN. You know, he's always playing table tennis with like Mikey Williams. Gets along really well with Ponce, the female announcer.
Christine Puncher.
Yeah, they all, you know, he gets along really well with all those guys. You can see behind the scenes, kind of top ranker, a very big family. And what happens if he's just like, you know what, it's better the devil, you know. You know, I'm loved here. I'm the number one guy here. I'm the big fish in the small pond. Why do I need to go to PBC?
See, that'd be like that. Then you definitely know that he doesn't care about his legacy. Like, I, for one, at this point, if he retired today, he's not a Hall of Famer. He's not. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. You need the names on your resume. You need it. He's 37-0. He has a talent. Nobody disagrees that he doesn't have talent. Crawford is a great fighter. But like, you need the names on your resume. You need the names on your resume. Like, you do. You need to fight those people. You need to fight those people. Like, and you're gonna get criticized. And if he resigns with ESPN or Top Rank, like you said, like the devil you know, and he takes this criticism, he keeps fighting these low level guys because obviously the PBC guys are just box him out for the rest of his career, then he has no place to whine and complain about the criticism, about his legacy, about his resume, like from that point forward. You can't, because you decided, like, oh, well, yeah, I wanted to sign with that. It's like, you have no reason to complain and be like, oh, I can't get these big fights. And be like, he got that criticism last time when he resigned. If he does it again, then you know, like, he doesn't care. Like, he doesn't. But, like, what do you – I don't know. I don't see any realistic reason for him to resign with Top Rank. I don't. I really don't. Like, all the best guys are at PBC. Look at that. I mean, they, like you said, you mentioned Mo Hooker and who's the other guy? I just lost
him. Jesse Vargas?
No. Mo Hooker, and they took him from DAZN.
Ramirez?
No. Mo Hooker, we just talked about him. Damn, Mike.
Regis Progray.
The PBC just picked them up. Regis Progray and Mo Hooker. And they're pretty much welterweights. You know, they've already said they're going to fight at welterweight, or they're right there on the cusp or something like that. Like, because I mean, they all see it. Like, that's where all the action's at. That's where all the money fights are at. You know, it's not only the money fights, but your legacy fights. These guys are the best in the division, and they're all under this banner. Like, you know, like, what? I mean, look at Spence. Like, I don't think anybody would have gave Spence when after he got the car crash. Everybody wants to see how he does ever since that car crash. That was a bad car crash. And people thought, oh, he's going to get like a tune-up fight because of his injuries. Like, you know, and people were giving him a pass. Like, hey, you know, like, he just needs like a rhythm fight to get back into it. And then he comes and he makes his first fight back against Danny Garcia. Like, holy crap.
And I also don't see Crawford getting the Pacquiao fight because – As far as we knew, it was supposed to be Mikey Garcia, Manny Pacquiao, over in, you know, Dubai, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, somewhere like that, because that was kind of the deal they had with DAZN. He had that, you know, $6 or $7 million payday to fight Jesse Vargas. You know, if he liked it, he had the option of a second fight with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. And everybody chatting to Robert Garcia's gym and all those guys, it was going to be Manny Pacquiao until the coronavirus hit. And I'm pretty sure Mikey Garcia, Manny Pacquiao draws a substantially bigger crowd than Manny Pacquiao, Terence Crawford.
You got to look at it this way for Pacquiao. Pacquiao, when he fought Thurman, I think he said in interviews, like, Thurman's a big guy. Pacquiao's not really like a 147 pounder. He's like a 140, 135. He's a small guy. And when he fought Thurman, he beat Thurman, but like, Pacquiao said in interviews, like, he's a strong guy. Those types of interviews that Pacquiao's given over the years, where he mentioned in post-fight interviews, where he mentioned that his opponent was like really strong and they were like big guys. There was only the ones that I can remember. It was Thurman and Antonio Margarito that they punched really hard, and he was just like, yeah, these guys are big. Like, these guys at 147 are bigger than like, I mean, they're bigger than like a Mayweather, you know, in terms of size, in terms of strength. I mean, look at Porter. Porter was fighting like, I think at 175 or something like that in the amateurs or something like that. Right. Like,
yeah.
And now he's fighting at 147. Like Spence is pretty much 154 to 160 pounder. You know, he's a strong kid. Danny Garcia, like, you know, he's got like that secret power with those overhand rights and stuff like that, where he's like those no look punches. I mean, I don't see Pacquiao taking any of these risks with these bigger guys, even though he can obviously show that he can still fight at like 42 years old and he's still a draw and he can still be competitive. But he's not going to be like, why am I going to get in there with somebody like Spence or Terrence Crawford? Like, why? Like, Pacquiao's legacy's his legacy's been set for years. Why does he need that? He doesn't need that. He's gonna go after Mikey Garcia likely because Mikey Garcia is Mexican. He brings the fans, and Mikey Garcia is a small guy like him.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you go for that? Like,
no, exactly. You know, Mikey doesn't have that one punch knockout power. Like you said, he's done the same thing that Pacquiao have done. He's come up from, you know, 130, 135, 140. So he's naturally a smaller guy. And like you touched on, he's got those legions of, you know, Hispanic fans. So Pacquiao really is in kind of a very sweet place that he can just kind of pick the big fights with the most money, with the least chance of him, you know, probably getting hurt.
Right.
Until he retires.
Right. Right. I mean, and you know, look at how they call him out, like, cause you'll make the most money with him. But then also, like, Crawford calling out Pacquiao is because, like, Pacquiao has that regular WBA or is it, I don't know what the hell belt it is, but he has some type of alternate title at 147 pounds. And so Crawford and Top Rank are thinking, well, if Crawford goes fights him, he takes that title. And then he goes after Errol Spence. And it's a type of like unification, like, for the WBO and the regular WBA or whatever the hell it is. Like, I don't know. I don't see realistically, I don't see it. Like, if it hasn't changed by now, like, Crawford will not be getting any of the PBC guys or Pacquiao. I don't see it. I just don't. And Pacquiao left Top Rank. You don't think Top Rank and Pacquiao like left on bad terms? Like, you know, nobody likes when you leave their company. Like, they're going to have bad taste and they're going to keep a bad taste in their mouth. Like, why would Pacquiao want to return the favor? You know, like, oh yeah, I'm going to work with Bob Arum again and have them take a share of my profits that I bring in because of my name. Like, I don't see it. I don't. I think, you know, Crawford's going to sit out in the summer. You're going to start hearing, like, look, in a couple months, in the next couple months, you're going to start hearing Bob Arum and Top Rank turn up the heat. Oh, we made an offer to Pacquiao, $23 million, some of that. And Pacquiao just hasn't responded. You know, he doesn't want to fight Terrence. They're going to make it seem like it's that side. That's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. Like, you know, but I mean, I think we talked about it. It might have been Saturday or just before. Terrence Crawford needs like a manager. Like, he needs look at MTK. Like, they're scooping up everybody, you know. Like, he needs somebody to like really be like the middleman between his interests and Top Rank, like, legitimately, like, to be there and be like, nah, man, this is what's gonna happen, or this is where we're going, and we're gonna make this happen. Like, that's what he needs, you know. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's gonna be very, very interesting to see how this all plays out. But you know, if it hasn't changed by this time, by this point, I don't see anything changing in the next year. I don't. What I mean,
sadly, yeah, I think I could see Crawford just kind of staying where he is because he likes Top Rank, and then unfortunately just kind of using that excuse like, hey, we've put offers in to PBC and, you know, it's not us. We're trying to make the fights. And
right,
kind of just the same old thing. And then unfortunately, he gets older.
I'm telling you, dude, like, I Crawford is a great fighter. Like, you could, nobody's denying that. If I was Top Rank, I would have just said, look, all right, Heyman, we'll send him over to Showtime. We'll send him over to Fox, you know, let our guy fight your guy for the title or something like that. Like, Crawford's one of those guys that you should have that much confidence in to let that guy go over there and take their belts and bring them back to ESPN. Like, imagine that. Imagine people would be like, holy crap. He went over there and like Jose Ramirez, he went to DAZN. Eddie Hearn put up the money. He went to DAZN for a unification matchup with Mo Hooker, and he beat Mo Hooker, and he brought the titles back. That's what they should have done with Crawford. But, I mean, I get it. There's, like, broadcasting rights, and, you know, ESPN probably didn't want to let it happen and whatever. But, I mean, honestly, that's what you had to do. Like the risk versus reward. And Crawford's talents are that great that I would have total confidence. Let him go over there because he has a great chance of winning. A great chance of winning and bringing those belts back and keeping them on ESPN. But I don't know, man. We'll see how it all plays out. But, you know, Top Rank and all them, they're trying to speak everything into existence with Pacquiao, Spence. Let's see how it all pans out, man. Maybe Canelo just left DAZN and Golden Boy. Is Crawford next? Who knows? Crawford could be next in the next year or so. Moving on, co-main event. This was definitely your favorite fight of the night, Mike. Joshua Franco and Andrew Maloney in their rematch. Fight to a no decision after a Franco's right, I believe it was right eye, closed shut. He couldn't see out of it. It was like he had no eye. All right, Mike. I'm going to give you the floor because I know you're very passionate about this. So let us know what you think about this.
In my humble opinion, I thought it was the jab. I thought he kind of caught him with more of the thumb. You know, and maybe the stitching or whatever around the area was kind of what made it look like it swelled up as, you know, quickly and as fat as it did. And obviously after, you know, Maloney saw that, he just went to town on that, kept jabbing at it, making it bigger, obviously thinking that, you know, he was going to get the stoppage, you know, later down the line. Obviously, you know, the end of the second round, they decided, you know, his eye wasn't good enough to continue. He was going to go to the new VAR system, the new video system that they had, and took her, 26 minutes to look at a 3-minute round, and then, in my opinion, still got it wrong. I just thought it was silly, the fact that they've got two 60, 70, 80-year-old guys trying to, you know, work this new contraption that they have for the video playback when, you know, most guys of that age can't even work their cell phones. So right. I understood that. In an interview afterwards, I think it was with Kevin Nioli, that he got Bob Bennett, who's the head of the Nevada Athletic Commission, and he kind of, the way that he emphasized it was that the only way they were going to overturn the referee's decision, who had called it a headbutt, was that if they had like 100% video evidence which showed it wasn't a headbutt, and because they weren't 100% convinced it was that punch, was the reason that they just went with the referee and went with the no decision.
So what do you think about that? Because I think that's a devil's advocate point, like in terms of like nothing's ever going to be 100% fair, or I mean like all the time there's going to be issues like this. It's boxing, MMA, they intertwine like that. So for something like that, that statement that Bob Bennett made where he's like, look, like, this is a policy, and like we can't definitively say that it happened because of this or that. Like, it. How do you respond to that? Like, in terms of like, you know, in terms of fairness for that process.
I understand that. You know, obviously, if you're going to overturn a decision, you want to be, you know, 100% correct, because you're obviously going against what the referee said during the fight. But I thought they took long enough in, you know, the 26, 27 minutes that they took to hopefully get to the right decision. And even though there's a, you know, a couple of, I think maybe two incidences that they suspect the headbutt happened, to me it looked more of some infighting, and, you know, his head was kind of like on his his shoulder area around that. I didn't think there was anything that kind of looked like a huge headbutt that would have, you know, caused the eye to swell up like that. And normally you get kind of a headbutt and then in slow motion, you'd get like blood dripping from it, where this seemed more of a punch because there was swelling, but there was no cut. Normally when you hit, you know, head to head, it opens up. And then as soon as they pull away, there's, you know, blood dripping down, blah, blah, blah. So it's hard to, say.
No, you're right. I mean, when I was watching the ESPN broadcast, they were like focusing a lot, and the commentary team was like, oh, it was from the jabs. And I was just like, man, I think that's right. And then, you know, obviously boxing Twitter puts their opinion, and majority of the people were like, oh, this was corrupt. They were pissed off at that, how it ended. And then like some people started posting like videos and clips and pictures of like, well, there was a headbutt right here. And like, I started seeing it. And there was one instance where, and people are saying it was like the opposite eye, but like, it would look like it was the closed eye side. I watched like 10 times. And I was like, but there was one instance, I think, where Frank was coming in, I think with like a right hand or something. And then like, he's kind of bent over a little bit, and then Maloney kind of like squats and then comes in with like the side, I think, of his left side of his head or something, and he does hit his facial area. So when I saw that clip, I was like, oh shit! I was like, well, could this? But I was trying to figure out, was this before? Because you couldn't really see his eye from that angle, so I couldn't tell if it was like swollen or not. But like, I mean, I think what made it really worse is that they, like you said, they took so long. They took so long where like it made them look like, damn, like is something wrong? And like they're just trying to figure out how to go about it, like how to mask the decision or how to, you know, like I did that because that was like, it was like 30 minutes people were waiting, right?
I think a better system would be you have a dedicated referee ringside who literally goes through and looks at those things, you know, during the fight, not necessarily just when called upon. You know, if there's something that the referee, because the referee calls it, the referee will go and say like, hey, that injury is a headbutt, that injury is, you know, due to whatever, so people know on the side. You know, I think it would be good if they did that. And I didn't like the way that they had to keep calling back to ESPN, hey, replay this section. Why don't they have like something there? Yeah. Why don't they have a feed which they can navigate themselves?
Yeah, that was weird.
Instead of calling back to ESPN, hey, can you put it back to the 1 minute in the first round or the second minute in the first round? They should be able to rewind and fast forward it themselves. You know, have somebody that's trained there and that's their job, you know, and they can, you know, either show the referee or they are a referee, and, you know, they can navigate it themselves and come to some kind of conclusion of, you know, taking, you know, that long, because it was just a bit of a stain again on boxing that it took nearly 30 minutes. You know, they had to wait for the main event. We also had to wait 30 minutes, 45 minutes for the college football to finish. You know, it was just a bit of a shit show. It gave us something to talk about on the podcast.
But, of course.
You know, it was kind of just, you know, a bit of a shit show altogether.
What recent fight did they use instant replay? And within like 30, 40 seconds, like they figured it out and they switched it and they kept going. It was like very, very quick and accurate.
Top Rank. It was
right. It was a top.
Pedraza and somebody else, where they called it they either called it a slip and it was a knockdown, or they called it a knockdown and it was a slip. And it was
something like that.
Pedraza against somebody.
Right. And like, I remember when that happened, people were like, oh my God, this is great. It was quick, accurate, and they kept the action moving.
Yeah.
And then right here, when they went to the replay, I was just like, oh, okay, they'll figure it out in like 2 minutes. That's what I thought, because that's the first thing I remembered. I was like, well, they did instant replay last time, and it was pretty quick. So I was just like, they should be able to figure it out pretty fast. And then 1 minute goes by, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. I'm like, oh, no, what are they trying to figure out? I think, like, you know, going back to Bob Bennett's comments, like, I think, like he said, like, he was just like, they couldn't definitively say one way or the other. Like, I know people are passionate and you know, up in arms about like, oh, this is not. I noticed the trend, at least online, people started getting a lot more passionate and calling corruption and this, this, and that after Maloney gave his post-fight interview, because he was very emotional. Like, he almost wanted to cry. So it pulled at people's heartstrings, you know? So people started like, yeah, they robbed him and stuff like that. Like, yeah, he might have been at the wrong side of the stick. Like, but there was, at least from that clip I saw, there was some type of contact between heads. Like, even though, like, you know, it did look like it was a jab, but like, I don't know. Like,
I think it was looking at Twitter and stuff like that, and because ESPN kind of sided with Maloney, they were all kind of stuck on that it was a jab. I think more people are siding with Maloney. You know, when you've got people like you touched on, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, one of the biggest kind of social media celebrities in the world, you know, commenting on a fight, kind of, you know, saying how bad the decision was. I think the only saving grace is because it's so controversial, even if they'd have given it to Maloney, they probably would have had a third fight anyway. Due to the fact of, like you touched on, it wasn't a 100%, like, hey, it was definitely the jab. I think it was, but, you know, there is a lot of people that seem to say that they think it was, you know, a headbutt. But the only problem is, you know, is Maloney going to come in, you know, in peak condition again, you know, because for those first two rounds, he was boxing Franco's head off. He looked completely different to the first fight. I think he realized not to get, you know, kind of drawn into a very close, you know, gunslinging fight in the middle of the ring, which kind of, you know, goes to Franco's kind of style, where he was keeping on his toes, just boxing from the outside, and kind of gave him a boxing lesson for those first two rounds.
Right.
But I obviously spoke to, you know, Tony Towles, the manager, this morning, and he says, you know, Top Rank have options on that fight, and he also believes that the WBA will also, you know, order a third fight, so, which is a saving grace for both of them. And I think they both deserve that. You know, Franco's been on the show, Maloney's been on the show. You know, you can't 100% say what it is. I think it was a punch. You kind of side more on, you think it was a head clash.
I haven't really like dissected it. I was trying to follow it and people's opinions and stuff like that. Obviously, the majority of the opinion, people were just passionate and like saying it was corruption. Maloney got robbed and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I mean, obviously ESPN was pushing, you know, showing like it was a jab, this, this, and that. And then other people were, you know, whatever, like following the narrative, which, you know, it probably was a jab. But in terms of like fairness, for when you're as a commission, like regardless of the issues that happens, like going back to Bob Bennett's statement, where he's just like, look, like we didn't have any definitive proof. Like there was enough of a gray area where it's just like, well, you know, like we can't, it's hard to make a one-sided decision because we don't have a black and white answer. I thought before I saw that clip on Twitter where like they did kind of connect on their heads, like Maloney kind of comes in and, you know, it just seems like it was just kind of like a weird, you know, coming of heads like that. I didn't think there was any type of headbutt or any type of contact like that. I thought, oh yeah, I was like, he was just jabbing his eye off. That's what I thought. And then I saw that, I was like, oh shit. I was like, well, that kind of gives like some type of security layer to the commission. Like, I mean, like, I don't know. I just thought it was ironic too, because people were like, oh, it's corrupt and blah, 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 this, this, and that. It's corrupt to make it a no decision or a no contest for the guy who's not backed by the broadcaster and the promoter. Like, what the hell is that?
The golden boy fighter?
Yeah. Yeah, normally we see, I mean, we've seen enough fights and we're going to see more fights. Normally we see where the A-side fighter, whoever is fighting for that main promoter, will get the decision or will get, you know, the benefit of the doubt, you know?
What do you think on what Bob Arum said with the interview? I think it was with Sean Zittel from Fight Hype about, you know, complaining about the decision and then saying, you know, let's get the fuck out of Las Vegas. Obviously,
that doesn't mean anything.
You know, Bob says a lot of things. you think we'll still see all of the fights based in Vegas since Top Rank's based in Vegas?
That doesn't mean anything. People who take Bob Arum seriously on things, like, what was that quote he said back in the day? Like,
yesterday I was lying, today I'm telling the truth.
Yeah. So, like, he knows. He's a lawyer, you know, and he's been in the promoting business, the boxing promotion business for most of his life. I mean, that has nothing to do with it. Like, you know, I remember, you know, he was when a year or two ago, some YouTube reporters or some of that boxing channels were asking him his opinion on like politics. I think at that time, Donald Trump was tweeting about boxing or something. I don't know. And Bob Arum was like saying, you know, Donald Trump sucks, whatever, this and that. You know, he's going to do whatever. And then like sometime later they asked him again and then he said, oh, I don't want Bernie Sanders. He's like, Bernie Sanders is going to mess up our country. He's like, I'd vote for Trump over Bernie Sanders. And people were like, what the hell? What? I remember that. Like, the guy says all this shit. He's all over the place. He's like, it's wild, but he knows the system. He knows how to play the system, you know, like he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He wouldn't have been as successful as he's been in this game if he doesn't know what he's doing. He knows that people see what he says, and he's just like, yeah, sometimes I talk out of my ass. He knows that. But he's got a multi-million dollar company, and arguably, you know, especially as you're raising your profile and they give you opportunities on big platforms, Top Rank is arguably probably the best one in terms of that.
It's funny because Eddie Herno gets a lot of slack for, you know, maybe saying one thing and doing something else, where, you know, Bob Arum's probably the worst for that.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, but Bob Arum's, it's like, what did Eddie Hearn tell us when he was on the show last year in Phoenix, is that when he came in onto the scene, people were like, oh yeah, Eddie Hearn, you know, take it to Frank Warren and blah, blah, blah. And then when he started taking over and really gained a major piece of the pie, people started like slagging him off and going after him, like, oh, you suck, Eddie. You're bad for the sport. Like, I think for Bob Arum is like, it's like that crazy grandpa, that crazy uncle you have, and he's been around for so long that people are just like, yeah, you know what? Like, I respect the guy just because like he kind of knows the business, he knows what's going on, and his quotes are so crazy and like they're so entertaining to an extent that people are just like, oh, there goes Bob Arum again. You know, it's just like people give him a pass in a way, you know? So and Eddie Hearn is like that, like he's still that young guy who he's still one of the main promoters in the world, but like, you know, he's not there yet. So, and, you know, it's just Bob Arum's just got that crazy grandpa complexion. So people are just like, ah, you know, there goes Bob Arum again. Well, Eddie Hearn is just like, you know, he's a tall guy, 6'5", you know, whatever, and like wears all these suits and stuff like that, and you know, comes out with a book, you know, a memoir or whatever the hell. Like, so people are like, forget this guy, like, you know. So it's just people are just hating. That's what it is. But whatever, you know, it's cool. It is what it is, but I think, like you said, like there's going to be a third fight, even if it was after the fact. Is it four or five rounds where it goes to the scorecards? Is it four or five?
Four? Yeah.
Even if it was after four rounds and it went to scorecards, and let's just say Maloney won or whatever, like there would be a third fight. There would be. Like, there's going to be a third fight. There's no way. It's not like they have too many options at that weight class.
That's his second trilogy.
Oh yeah, Franco, because he was with
Negrete.
Negrete, yeah. It's crazy, huh? Hey, but it's cool though. It's good though, because like it gives you something to do at that weight. Like you said, like we talked about the weight class. I mean, Chocolatito is probably like the most significant name, right?
And I think a lot of those guys are going to kind of be taken up with fighting each other. You know, the top guys at that weight category. You know, yeah. Chocolatito, Estrada, and all those guys are probably going to do a little round robin. So, you know, Maloney and Franco having a third fight.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're going to fight again. They're going to fight again. If people like, you know, and then hopefully there's nothing controversial like that happens in the third fight. Hopefully it it is what it is, you know. But you know, it, people are just like, oh, this is why people leave boxing and blah, blah, blah. Like, look, man, I could see a lot of people, because especially because Joe Rogan kind of tweeted about it. There was a lot of casual fans who jumped in, because I saw like a lot of messages or tweets and stuff. Hey, you know, like, I'm not a hardcore boxing fan, but you know, I was watching this, or I looked into this, and like, you know, what's this guy, or is this really a bad decision? Like, I saw a lot of people with tweets like that or messages like that. You know, I mean, which makes sense when somebody famous kind of puts light on a subject. A lot of people were like, oh, well, what does he talk about? I'm going to go look into it. Like, I think you could agree with me that we've been covering the sport for so long, and we've been watching it for so long, that like, we've seen the worst of what the sport has to offer in terms of decisions, in terms of, you know, question marks, in terms of, you know, if you want to call it corruption. So that's why, like, I'm just like, I've seen worse than that. You know, if people are all up in arms about that, like, what is going to change? What is going to change? Stuff like that is always happening. And like, what, you know, and the people are like, oh, I'm going to boycott boxers, I'm going to do this, or this needs to change. What's really going to change? What's really going to change? Realistic.
It's not going to change. You know, that old saying, there's no such thing as bad publicity. How many times is that little clip of the fight with the suspected headbutts, how often is that going to get played? How many eyes are going to see that? Because how many different people retweeted it? You got Joe Rogan retweeting it and stuff like that. And, you know, what was it, 4 or 5 years after it should have been done, you know, the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, how many people were like, oh, I'm not going to pay for that. It's going to be trash. Biggest pay-per-view of all time.
Right, exactly. So there you go. I don't know. They're going to fight again, though. Like, I'd be very surprised if they don't, but they will. I'm like,
he'll get ordered.
Yeah. They're going to fight again, you know. And then hopefully the third matchup, they'll figure it out. But whatever. But hopefully Franco's okay, because that eye looked pretty nasty.
Mm.
Looked very, very nasty. Moving on. Joshua Greer, this was, I think this was on ESPN Plus, right? Joshua Greer Jr. and Edwin Rodriguez fight to a majority draw. And this was so there was only three fights for the whole card?
No, I just took on the three main ones because I knew we were going to spend a lot of time talking about Crawford and then also the Franco.
Okay. So did you catch this one? I didn't catch this one. If you did, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a good fight for Josh Greer to come back after, you know, having the loss against Planner last year. Maybe a little bit too tough, because obviously it looked like he kind of changed his style. He changed his hair. He stopped bringing out, you know, the night pillow with him after, you know, taking that loss. Kind of odd to see Shakur Stevenson in his corner as his chief.
That was weird, huh? I saw stuff on Twitter about that. I didn't watch the fight, but I saw stuff on Twitter about that.
But to be fair to him, he actually gave some really good technical advice towards Greer. Very close. There was a lot of rounds which were kind of very hard to try and work out who'd won them. So I wasn't really too surprised it was a draw. I think maybe Greer should drop down to come back up. I think if he's going to go back out there and correct a lot of the things that he was doing wrong, because when he had that night persona, when he was bringing out the pillow, he kind of headhunted a lot. In this fight, you could see that they kind of told him, like, hey, you need to go to the body more. You know, so he was kind of working to the body, and you could hear Shakur telling him, you know, like, you're putting money in the bank, you know, work to the body. It's going to tire him out. And maybe it was Edwin Rodriguez was a little bit too hard whilst he was still trying to work out kind of his new style under the new trainer.
Right.
So I think maybe step back down, get used to that new, got Kay Karoma and Shakur in his corner, and then work back up. So.
Yeah, that whole Shakur Stevenson in his corner, I was like, where the hell did that come from? You know, that was very interesting to see. That was very interesting to see.
Well, Shakur's been working with Jorge Capetillo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does Shakur live in Vegas now?
Yeah.
He does, right? He moved.
Yeah, he's been in Vegas. I don't know whether it's just for during the coronavirus or walks, because it's so he's close to the top rank bubble. But
right.
Yeah, he's been working out with Jorge Capetillo's gym. And, you know, Jorge's been working with Kell Brook, Chavez, Andrew Ruiz. So ever since, you know, he had Tyson Fury in camp,
yeah,
you know, he's taken it to another level.
Stevenson's from where originally?
Ohio?
Is it Ohio?
I think it's Ohio, yeah.
Like where Broner's from, around there? Cincinnati or something?
I think he's from, yeah, around there.
Around there? Okay. I mean, if you really move to Vegas, like, you know, fair play to him, because, like, you know, that shows that he's, like, if he's serious, or maybe he's there because of the COVID thing, he just wants to be close to the bubble. Who knows? But that's something that, you know, Tank Davis needs to do. You know,
I think he's grown up a lot. I thought in the interviews that he gave, you know, during the fight, and then some of the stuff that he now puts on social media, he seems to have grown up. There's obviously he had that trouble. Remember when he had that fight in the like a parking structure where him and some of the guys got into a scrap,
right?
He seems to have grown up a lot since then.
I think the difference is that Top Rank, Bob Arum and those guys, like, because after that issue with when he got in a fight where he, like, I think he hit a girl or. It was a bunch of people or something like that. I guess some security surveillance footage or something like that, like a gas station. I don't know what the hell it was. You know that Bob Arum and the Top Rank brass brought him in and they're just like, look, if you want to keep doing this shit, you're going to ruin yourself, you know, but you cannot do that. Like they put their foot down. Like, whereas like Tank Davis, who is obviously a great fighter, like, you know, I think that, and you tell me if I'm wrong here in this analogy or not, but do you think that Tank Davis is more like friends with Leonard Ellerby, Floyd Mayweather, like his team like that, instead of like, yeah, those are my promoters, like these are my management, or these are my people, like who will guide my career, like where there's like that, there's no... That particular form of respect isn't there, if you know what I mean. Whereas Shakur Stevenson views Top Rank, Todd DeBuff, Bob Arum, and those guys as like different type of figures, like authority figures and stuff, you know, where he knows like, okay, guy, I can't disappoint these guys, or I got to do these. These guys are looking out for my career or something like that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I could see that, you know. You can see on those Showtime All Access that he kind of looks up to Floyd, but unfortunately, you know, Floyd and Leonard Ellerby can't be there 24/7 with him. And like you touched on during the All Access, is, you know, he still goes back to where he lives. You know, he still classes all those guys as friends, and, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, that kind of leads him astray. And I think, you know, a lot of people know that. I think him and Floyd fell out. There was all those rumors about why him and Floyd fell out, which we can't touch on during the podcast. But
yeah, no, I know. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, yeah, Stevenson, if he didn't move to Vegas, that's a pretty pretty respectable move for him in terms of his career. Because, you know, he's like, hey, man, yeah, I'm serious. Like, and I'm sure Top Rank told him, like, look, move to Vegas. You know, we'll hook you up here. You know, obviously the kid's talented. Moving on. Also this past Saturday, from the Wembley Arena in London on DAZN here on the USA. And where was it? Was it on DAZN in the UK too or no? No, it wasn't, right?
No, it was on Sky Sports.
Sky Sports, right?
It was freely available on Sky Sports, YouTube. They put this card everywhere.
Oh, sweet. Katie Taylor remains undefeated with a 10-round unanimous decision win over Miriam Gutierrez, who suffers the first loss of her career. Excuse me. Taylor retains her WBC, WBA, IBF, and WBO and Ring Magazine lightweight world titles. All right, Mike. Katie Taylor, best female fighter in the world today, or what? Yeah.
She's the self-anointed GOAT, greatest woman of all time.
Whoa. Yeah. Clarissa Shields is going to be pretty mad at you for that, Mike.
I think if they could fight, obviously they can't because the weight divisions are quite far apart. I think Katie Taylor smokes her, to be honest with you.
Whoa.
She just seems more natural boxer. She seems like she has a little bit more pop. She seems, you know, faster, kind of, you know, maybe takes it a little bit more seriously than Clarissa Shields does. And in this fight, I think Miriam Gutierrez, you know, she got herself into she was a mandatory contender for the title, but you could see from round one that she was seriously outmatched, but she was so game. She came to fight. You know, in the round 10 or 11, you thought maybe the referee could have stopped it because she was probably lost every single round. But fair play to her. You know, she saw the final bell. She was very, very respectful. You know, she helped Katie Taylor put the belts. They kind of held the belts together and took a photograph and stuff like that. She's a big, she's a big advocate over in Mexico for domestic violence. It was really good. In fact, every single challenger on this card, all really, really game. All came to fight. There was no real kind of like easy knockovers. All really good. Really good contenders.
So you give Eddie Hearn the credit for putting these matchups together, huh?
Yeah, it surprised me. Obviously, I watched it because we watch everything because of the podcast and stuff like that. But, you know, I wasn't expecting too much out of this card and because of there wasn't too many huge names on there.
Right.
But yeah, I actually really enjoyed it, to be honest with you.
Fair play. Fair play to Eddie Hearn. And Katie Taylor, now they're I think the only matchup that makes sense is the one that they were almost made the last time is against Amanda Serrano. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think so, because Serrano has power. Whereas sometimes I think Katie Taylor, like when she fought Persoon and sometimes during this fight against Gutierrez, she kind of threw caution to the wind and got tagged quite a lot because I think she kind of realized that she could take, you know, Persoon's power and she could also take Gutierrez's power.
Right.
With Serrano, not so much. I don't think so. Depending on what weight they fight at. But that's really the only fight to take. And whether Serrano's ducking her or what, I don't know. Obviously, listening to Eddie Hearn and Lou DiBella, you know, the truth's somewhere in the middle. So, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Hopefully we need it because, you know, she's another one who she's kind of completed that division. You're just looking at legacy fights.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I think that's the only fight that makes sense for either of them, you know, match them up and kind of see where it goes. Especially if you can get fans in attendance for that fight, like in New York or something like that. Like I feel like you can probably get a good turnout for something like that.
You know, like in New York, you've got a lot of obviously, you know, Irish out there and a lot of, she's from Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of Puerto Ricans in New York.
Yeah. So I think New York would be the perfect place.
Yeah. I think you could win there. Or even if it's like a co-main to like another, like a supporting another main event or something like that. Like, so they can all make more money, you know? But I mean, we'll see. But I think that's the only fight that makes sense for either of them. You know, like they almost made it last time, right? But then there was like money issues, and then they were all talking crap about each other. And then Serrano started talking crap against Lou DiBella. Yeah. She's like, "Oh, I was never told they contacted this person." She's like, "Lou DiBella, what the hell's going on around here?" And then they started going back and forth. I was like, "What the hell?" They're doing all their negotiations on Twitter. It was wild. It was wild. But moving on, Terry Harper, also on this card, gets the 9th round TKO over Katrina Thanders. I don't know if it's Katrina Thanders, and retains the WBC and IBO super featherweight world titles. What'd you think of Harper's 9th round TKO, Mike?
Good stoppage by the referee. You can see that she was, you know, considerably down, probably lost pretty much every single round to Terry Harper. So there was kind of why carry on with the abuse, you know, that she was getting. Terry Harper, I thought it was a good performance from her. She said, well, she put a picture on, actually. She broke her hand, I think, in the 4th round. So after that, she kind of just relied on moving and using her jab. Obviously, you know, styles make fights. And in this fight, she looked a lot better than she did when she, you know, maybe lost to Natasha Jonas. And I think everybody really, I know she's talking about unifying, but really, she should have given Natasha Jonas another fight after, you know, people were pretty split about that fight. A lot of people thought Natasha Jonas really should have taken the titles that day. But obviously, you know, Michaela Mayer from Top Rank is making a lot of noise online about fighting Terry Harper. So maybe Terry Harper's, you know, past that fight, or maybe they're going to come round and, you know, have that British title fight after they've chanced to unify. Because, you know, Matrim also signed up Maver Hamdusic. And they also recently signed Hayan Mi Choi, who I didn't realize actually trains out of India.
Oh, what the hell?
She trains
desert?
She trains with Chocolatito's trainer, Caballero.
Joel Diaz. Oh, Caballero. Oh, it's not even Joel Diaz anymore. What the hell? That's wild.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Just a female Asian champion out of China, trains in India.
How crazy, huh? I'm telling you, man, LA, Southern California area, they show up, man. This is where you get all your... I mean, was it Lee Selby? Was the one who told us, like, or at least confirmed it, even though we knew it for a while, where he's like, yeah, he's like, I come out here to train all the time because, like, the sparring and everything, like, you can't get that back home. Yeah. He's like, this is where it's all at. This is where you get the best work. So everybody comes here from the desert to LA to in the Inland Empire, wherever, you know, there's reputable trainers and boxing work, if you will, at different areas of Southern California, which is crazy. That's what people show up. That's crazy. Crazy us thinking about like somebody from China coming all the way to India.
That must be such a dramatic change.
That's wild, huh?
Just desert, and it's about, what, 110, 120
shit
degrees, which is about 40-something degrees for the people in the UK.
That's wild. Moving on, Rachel Ball gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over Georgelina Guanini. Hope I said that right. This is for the interim WBC super bantamweight title. What'd you think about Rachel Ball's unanimous decision win, Mike?
People were really split on this on Twitter. You know, Rachel Ball was throwing a lot. It kind of reminded me of the Lee Selby one, where I thought Lee Selby won, but a lot of people were saying that Ferocious Kambosos, you know, his kind of counterpunching was, you know, scoring the more effective punches and, you know, taking down the health bar if we were converting them into, you know, fighting characters on a computer. You know, Rachel Ball threw a lot, missed a lot. I thought Georgelina, you know, threw a lot, kind of countered really, really well with that right hand over the top. You could see she was obviously, you know, very skilled, even though she came in, you know, overweight. I thought the scorecards were favored heavily in Rachel Ball's favor, like far too much. I thought it was a lot closer fight than that. Maybe one I'd have to watch back. I thought maybe Georgina maybe snuck it, but you could see they were probably going to give it to the home fighter since they're trying to kind of put her back in line to face Shannon Courtney later down the line, since she seems to be the golden girl of matchroom boxing. I thought it was funny how that Rachel Ball was supposed to fight Ebony Bridges for the WBA. Georgelina Guiani weighed in over the weight. Damn. So they took off the WBA title, and then out of nowhere, the WBC just put an interim title in there, even though the WBC is not about money.
You seem so surprised about that move, Mike.
Out of nowhere. Because I was like, this is a WBA fight. And then I was like, why the hell is there a WBC belt in there? But I don't know.
You seem so surprised about something like that, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Good old Mauricio.
Like it's never going to happen again, or it's not. Hey, you got to give it to him. You know, we're kind of going sidetrack on the whole WBC thing. Like, The guy does, like, they get criticized for all these crazy things that they do, belts, new weights, whatever. But he doesn't shy away from the media. He gives interviews and he takes the heat. And people might not like his answers, but, like, I mean, like, he went on Boxing Social, he went on some other outlets and gave interviews about the whole new weight class or whatever. I'm not even going to mention it, but, like, I don't want to mention the name at least. But, like, the guy, he runs to the fire and, like, you know, he might give answers that obviously people don't like. But, like, he talks to the media even when it's, like, it's about criticism and stuff. It's, you know, you got to give him credit for that. It's pretty crazy because, like, you know, people would be like, nobody would kind of blame him if he didn't want to talk about it.
No, exactly. Yeah, you have to give him props for, you know, standing up there and taking the questions from the media, you know, and then obviously our buddy over at Boxing Social, you know, Rob Tebbutt doesn't shy away from the hard questions.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. Moving on, Jack Cullen gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over John Doherty. Cullen was actually down in the first round and still ended up with the win. How'd you see this fight?
A lot of people were picking Doherty to come in there and blow him out. But I think people kind of missed that, you know, Jack Cullen had been in there with a lot of good fighters, you know, Felix Cash, Zach Chelly, John Harding Jr. So you could just see that he'd fought at a much higher level, whereas, you know, John Doherty coming into this fight, obviously he was only 9 fights into his pro career, but he'd only fought, I think, 2 people with winning records. And so, you know, you could see that a lot of other people had kind of just got blown out of there and how much had he learned, whereas, you know, Jack Cullen had been in there with those more seasoned fighters and was, in my eyes, just a little bit, kind of old-manned him a bit. You could see early on, you know, John Doherty just kind of ran at him, caught him early on. Some people thought it was kind of a push, but I think he kind of clipped him just as he was going down. Jack Cullen got up slowly but surely, kind of worked his way back into the fight and very strange that he's a 6'3" super middleweight who you would kind of like Fonfara, who you would expect to use his size advantage and just keep him off on a jab. Nope, exactly the same as Fonfara, where he just kind of invites him in, and he's very good at working the inside work for somebody who's huge at that weight. But you know, he was kind of lucky last time as well when he fought Zach Chelly, because I think they gave that as a draw, where I thought Chelly won that. But back to the drawing board for John Doherty, just kind of needs to kind of clean those edges. He kind of was a little bit relied upon just being bigger and stronger than a lot of people so far. So I think he just kind of needs to polish himself up a little bit and then come back. You know, he's still young, only 10 fights into his career, so he can still, you know, come again.
Isn't Callum Smith like 6'3", super middleweight too?
Oh, he's huge. I've met him. I saw him in Vegas when Liam Smith fought Vargas when his ear blew up.
He's
huge at that weight. Yeah. I don't know how he makes it.
That's wild. Yeah, he's a big kid. Rounding off this DAZN card, Ukashir Farouk gets the 14th win of his career with the unanimous decision win 10 round over Angel Aviles for the vacant. Damn, these alphabet titles, Mike. WBA Continental Bridgerweight Bantamweight Championship. I don't know. I just added all that stuff. What'd you think about Farouk's decision win?
Class. Cash Farouk, class. Big fan of his, has been since I saw him kind of on the British scene. I thought he beat McGregor when they had that big Scottish dust-up a while back. You could see early on that he was just too skillful for Aviles, and I think this was the first fight on the card that I watched, and you could just see early on Aviles was just one of those Mexican fighters, was just going nowhere. Farouk was just teeing off at him, probably won pretty much every single round, but Aviles just kept coming. And, you know, I think this is why, you know, people like Lee Selby tell us that they come over here to fight, you know, the tough, you know, Hispanic fighters, because they can just give them body shot after body shot and stuff like that, and they just don't go down. Whereas, you know, they're paying for sparring in the UK and they just can't take it. So
it's wild.
That's one thing that he's told us before. But big, good fight for Farouk. You can see that obviously he got a lot of rounds in and did the full 10. You know, and onward to bigger and better things. I know that McGregor said that he was going to pick up, hopefully, the European title, and then he would give him a rematch. So that would be good. You know, I'm not too sure whether they'll still have the Commonwealth, the British, and the European all online for that fight. But, you know, let's hope so, because the first one was a really good close fight. I think a lot of people was kind of split on who won that out with Farouk or McGregor. So great British fight, though, for later down the line.
Later down the line. Fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 21st of November, from the Wembley Arena in London on DAZN. Conor Benn, 16-0, goes up against Sebastian Formella, 22-1, for the WBA Continental Welterweight. Damn it, Mike, another belt. All right, Benn, Formella, what's your preview on this? What's your take, Mike?
Big step up for Conor Benn, really, because, you know, a lot of people were shouting him out from around the British scene. And, you know, a lot of people would just kind of, you know, bounce off, I think, and, you know, the Conor Benn name, if they got the fight, probably be a big payday. But for Conor, for somebody that didn't have a lot of amateur experience and was kind of learning the game in the pro ranks and had a couple of, you know, wobbly fights early on, to fight somebody that just fought Sean Porter for the WBC. And I remember you were saying, you know, nobody has an easy ride against Sean Porter, but Formella took him 12 rounds. That shows Formella knows his way around the ring. That this really, I think, is going to be a bit of a test. Formella may not have that name, but that showing he gave against Sean Porter, he definitely knows what he's doing in there.
No, right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who have forgotten that Formella fought Porter. Yep. You know, that's the only loss he has in his career, you know. And going 12 rounds with somebody like Porter, for as much pressure as he puts on you and he's just kind of smothering you the whole time.
Also, he picked up the IBO title in, I think it was January this year, against Roberto Ariaza, who you might remember, Danny, from the Thompson's boxing cards.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he was similar style to Conor Benn, because Conor Benn, unless he's kind of, you know, managed to change over the time, he kind of relies a lot on being bigger, stronger, and fitter than his opponents, rather really than having that boxing finesse, because he came to the game so late.
Right.
And is that going to be enough to face somebody like Formella? You know, Formella is a European fighter, German fighter, so he's not really been in there with a lot of the biggest names, but in the fights that he has done against Roberto Arriaza and Sean Porter, he hasn't done badly.
Nope. Yeah, that's definitely an intriguing matchup. You know, kind of see, gives you a real measuring stick on these two, especially for Conor Benn. So definitely an intriguing matchup. Also on this card, Fabio Wardley, 9-0, goes up against Richard Larte. Larte. What do you think about this matchup?
Good fight for Fabio Wardley. Richard Larte, obviously, he's been in there recently with Gorman, and then also before that was in with Daniel Dubois. So he's become a little bit of a kind of like a heavyweight journeyman over here. But if everyone can remember when he fought Daniel Dubois, he caught Dubois and kind of rocked him a few times and kind of just stood in the middle of the ring and just traded blows with Daniel Dubois, which, you know, most people wouldn't want to since he's such a beast. Yeah. He fought Gorman, didn't look as good against Gorman. Gorman is kind of technical, but did come in, you know, substantially overweight. So kind of maybe his stock dropped a little bit when in that fight against Gorman. Wardley, he'll come in shape. He's pretty game. Good kind of measuring stick, I would say, for Fabio Wardley. Good step up for him. He was another one who kind of came to the pro game kind of late. But yeah, should be a good challenge. I could see Wardley, you know, winning. Larte kind of maybe has got into that journey mode kind of model where he kind of just shows up to lose. He doesn't necessarily show up to win. He kind of just gets into like second or third gear and just kind of stays there. Like, you know, he kind of realizes like, I'm not here to win. But good, definitely a good step up, and it's a kind of a name for Fabio Wardley's record.
Right. Rounding off that card, Alan Babich, 5-0, goes up against Tom Little. Alan Babich, how many times has he fought this year? I feel like we've talked about him multiple times.
This, I think, will be the third since he kind of hit the scene in the in fight camp with his Alan Babich the Savage persona. So, you know, this was kind of another step up fight for him. Tom Little, fair play to him. If you look at him, he kind of knew that he was going to be the next guy in line for Alan Babich. Got himself in great shape, lost a load of weight, looks like he's been training hard. I think he realizes that, you know, Alan Babich is kind of a little bit raw, a little rough around the edges. Yeah. So I think he thinks that this could lead to some bigger paydays for him. So he's taking this 110% professionally for once. So this, you know, Tom Little, he's kind of surprising because he plays that Joker role, but in some fights when he turns up in shape, he's kind of skillful, knows his way around the ring, and he is good. He just sometimes doesn't, you know, take it seriously outside of the ring. And right. That obviously, you know, lead to some bad performances. So I could see him shocking people here,
right,
and winning this if he can just stay away from, you know, Babbage's right hand, which is kind of all he relies on. He just kind of comes out with like a butter bean, you know. He's kind of like four rounds. He's probably good for four rounds and just comes at you. So it should be fun, though. It'd be a fun fight.
Babbage the Savage. That's a pretty cool nickname. News and notes of the show. Canelo versus Callum Smith reportedly in the works for possibly December 19th in somewhere in Texas. They're talking about Cowboy Stadium. This is just that supposedly it's being negotiated or looked at. It's not official yet, of course. At least as of this episode that we're recording. Canelo, Callum Smith. Like I said, Callum Smith is like 6'3", super middleweight. You said you've met him in Las Vegas. He's a pretty big guy. You don't know how he makes 168 pounds. What do you think about this matchup? And, well, you can start wherever you want, but if Canelo literally goes back to DAZN after he just got out of his contract with Golden Boy and DAZN, how crazy is that?
I don't think it's overly crazy because I think we all know that he wants his way out of the Golden Boy contract so he can just really pick and choose the biggest purses for the rest of his career.
Right.
And I always thought that the Caleb Plant rumor was kind of a little bit off the ball because we knew that obviously, you know, he was supposed to fight a British opponent in Easter, you know, which was looked like it was going to be Billy Joe Saunders because DAZN wanted to use that to open up the European British market when DAZN started there. DAZN is scheduled to start, you know, I think the the 5th of December in the UK.
Right.
So to try and get Callum Smith and Canelo, you know, on the 19th in the first month of DAZN hitting the UK makes sense. So they can throw some money at Canelo, hoping that, you know, that will bring in subscribers. And what bigger fight can you do than, you know, Canelo, Callum Smith? You know, it's a good test, because if you look at it, and Callum Smith has all the physical, you know, advantages. So it is one of those ones where you kind of, if you're a fan, you're like, well, you know, Callum Smith's a lot bigger, got a bigger reach. You know, he's got some world titles. He's undefeated. Perfect name on paper as an opponent for Canelo, and also for DAZN to bring in subscribers.
Yeah, and he's got the WBA super middleweight
Ring world magazine. Title
and Ring magazine. So there you go. You know, you can't. I don't know how people can go against Canelo not being pound for pound, like, especially when he's like fighting these way bigger guys who are world champions and like Ring magazine champions, like. The guy's like, he's fighting these guys and he's beating them. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting matchup. I think it's also interesting that Ryan Garcia, Luke Campbell was postponed or whatever, because Luke Campbell got COVID. And now, like, supposedly, I'm telling you, I think that was all planned. I don't know. It just seems like it was very convenient. Ryan Garcia trains with Canelo. He trains right there in San Diego. They're always around each other. You know, he's already made it known that he wants to fight on his undercard. Like,
Eddie says he can't. That was raised in an interview, I think, on Boxing Social. And Eddie was saying that the Ryan Garcia, Luke Campbell fight can't go with the Canelo Callum if made, because that's a Golden Boy show. And this would be a Matchroom Boxing show.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because I did think the same thing. I remember texting you about it. But Eddie said on Boxing Social with Rob Tebbit that he can't, because that's a Golden Boy show. So that will probably move to December 19th or maybe even January, depending on if the Canelo Callum Smith fights. Maybe.
I mean, honestly, it's in DAZN's best interest to keep both of those fights separate from each other, have them be their own main event, because then they can secure people to be subscribers in two different months.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's better for them just to keep it, because then some people are going to be like, over here in the States, it's $20 a month if you do it monthly, or if you pay $100 for the whole year, it's $100, which comes out to be like $8 a month. So if people are just like, well, I want to watch this fight this month and I want to watch Garcia Campbell next month, I'm going to pay $40 and I'll just pay $100 for the whole year and hopefully they give me more after or something like that. Like people will make decisions like that. So, yeah, I didn't see that Eddie Hearn interview, but that's a really good point. So it's in their best interest, DAZN's best interest, to keep those events apart. Dave Allen just recently announced his retirement this weekend. We were talking about it off air. We shared a video of where he's sparring Alexander Usyk, and then he gets hit by Usyk and he's kind of out on his feet. You know, you want to describe it a little bit more, Mike?
Yeah, you know, obviously this morning, Dave Allen did an interview with Coogan Cassius saying that he was retiring, and gave one of the reasons was, you know, he just, after the David Price fight, he kind of thought himself lucky that he didn't have any, you know, lasting damage. And then he fought Usyk. Usyk was sparring for the Trezora fight, which just happened. He kind of, inspiring Usyk, he puts a video up and where he gets caught by a left hand from Usyk. He's kind of out on his feet, says that he kind of snores for like a couple of seconds. He then kind of wakes up, finishes the round. You know, luckily and respectfully, you know, Usyk being the really nice guy that he is, he didn't take advantage of this, you know, because how many times have we seen in, you know, sparring videos, which sometimes fighters post, where they knock somebody kind of out on the feet and then they just take him out. You know, and then they post it on social media, thinking it's cool, thinking it's funny. Whereas Usyk, for the rest of the round, just kind of moved away, actually kind of caught him when it first happened and kind of helped him on his feet.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the round, there was only a few seconds left, to be fair, and kind of moved away, kind of just watched him, essentially. And then Dave Allen said that he would kind of, for the next 30 minutes, kind of blacked out, you know.
That's wild.
Not to the floor, but just couldn't remember what happened. And then he said about 30 minutes later, he's kind of packing his bag at the end of sparring. Then he kind of comes round and can kind of remember what happens. And he said that when he was chatting to Eddie Hearn about opponents for this coming weekend because he was supposed to be on this card.
Right.
He kept saying no to every single opponent that Eddie was offering him. And Eddie was, you know, hey, what's happening? You know, Dave, like, it's not like you. Normally you'll say yes to anybody. You know, you fought Dylan White, you fought Luis Ortiz. And then it just dawned on him, you know what? I don't want to get punched anymore. And, you know, I think I want to retire. And, you know, Dave Vallon is a great example of somebody that had, you know, limited ability, maybe British level ability, but he made himself into a pay-per-view star. You know, he kind of headlined with David Price, and it just goes to show that you don't necessarily need the skill of, you know, like an Anthony Joshua and stuff like that. If you can relate to the fans in this day and age, and if you can get over on social media, you can make good money. You know, Dave Allen has made substantially more money than his ability alone would give him. You know, he's got a couple of houses like he touches on, you know, and he'll probably be okay. He's got to work, he says, when he retires. But, you know, when you hear people moaning like Heather Hardy about like equality and stuff like that, that's not how the boxing game works. It's putting bums on seats. Look at Roman Chocolatito, like one of the pound for pound best fighters in the world. Unfortunately, fights at super flyweight, gets paid very little because of that's not an attractive weight division. Dave Allen, very limited ability, but people can relate to him because of his mental health struggles, you know, like his very likable kind of guy next door, like funny persona that he puts across on social media has elevated him to, you know, astronomical pay levels above.
It's crazy
what he really deserves in terms of ability. And, you know, I don't think that's something Heather Hardy deserves, you know. It's just, you know, how it is. It's not like you're a boxer, I'm a boxer, we should be paid the same. It's not like you work in an office, we work next to each other, we both do the same job. Yes, we both should get paid the same. That's not how the boxing business works. And Dave Allen is a prime example of that.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, like you said, like, you know, if you kind of look at the overall picture, you don't need a world title to be able to make a living and make some money in the boxing business, at least. Like, look at that. Like, he's a prime example of that. He's a prime example.
Look at the guy that he trains, Danny Morrell. Danny Morrell was the opening fight on the IFL TV for the MTK card the other day.
Right.
12,000 people watched that live on IFL TV. That was him turning pro. And that's down to, like, you know, thanks to Dave Allen and him, you know, always been on social media. They're always on Instagram. They're always posting stuff. People can relate to him. You know, he kind of showed that he was nervous before his fight. That was breaking like IFL TV records for, you know, that where that was placed on the card. That was the opening fight. That was the curtain raiser. You know, how many fights have we been to ringside where you go to the curtain raiser? There's the dude's family. That's it. There's nobody else in there. And he had 12,000 people on IFL TV.
And Bob Arum.
Yeah, good old Bob.
Dave Allen, man. Well, if this really is the end, you know, good luck to him. Good luck to him. He obviously came in and you know, he didn't let boxing control him. He controlled the sport and made some money. So, you know, good luck in retirement and you know, but we know how this game works. Sometimes when there's something lucrative on the, you know, they might pull you back in. Sometimes they come back in. Which leads us to, well, I'll talk about this first. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. coming up. Hasn't really been getting that much press. They did a lot of press at the beginning. I think the week of, I think you're going to see a lot, like a big media blitz for this, I think.
Yeah, obviously next week will obviously be, you know, Sunday the 22nd. So that'll be the card that we're previewing. Also, the big fight for that weekend, the big professional fight for that weekend is Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce. Hopefully a third time of asking. We don't get, you know, a coronavirus or anything like that, because that's, you know, just a clash that we've all been waiting for. So, you know, wrap them up in cotton wool, please. Don't let anybody near them for this last final week, because we want to see that.
Yeah. But I mean, whatever. I mean, I forgot until we talked about it just before the show started, the Dubois Joe Joyce like fight is coming up. Like that's one of my favorite matchups of this whole year so far. Like I hope it produces the action that people are expecting and behind the hype and all that stuff. I hope it does. I really hope it does. I mean, do you think it will?
I think so, because they both got good chins from what we've seen so far with Joe Joyce, literally the juggernaut, you know, nickname is perfect. You know, we've seen him hit a few times and he just keeps coming forward like a robot. Daniel Dubois has got caught pretty cleanly by Richard Latte. I mean, he seems to have a good chin. So, yeah, I think it's going to take a lot to get these guys down.
Yeah, it's a juggernaut. That's a crazy nickname. I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there's ever been like anybody that really had that nickname, at least anybody who's prominent. But the juggernaut, he just doesn't stop. But wrapping up here this week's episode, Mike, before we sign off once again this week, let our people and our listeners and fans know where they can find us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And, you know, if you join us next week, we'll be reviewing all the fights we just spoke about and, you know, previewing the Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce card. And, you know, we'll go over Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr.
Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. So once again, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.